But explain to me who benefits from both the selling off of this land and the growing of palm oil and rubber.
Well, I think the first line of beneficiaries obviously are the companies. They make huge profits on these investments. They make a lot of profit. They've got absolute control over how much of their profits they can repatriate. There's absolutely no limit to that. So the companies benefit enormously. On the second level, you've got individuals within government who benefit from some of these transactions. And without going into individual name calling, we've got situations where individual ministers or very senior government officials have taken shares in companies that have been awarded concessions. We saw one of these instances in the southeastern part of the country in the case of a mining company that had actually given up shares to a senior government official that was involved with the negotiation on behalf of the government at the time they got the concession. Then on the third level, I can say very clearly that senior government officials are the ones who benefit most from the taxes that are collected from these companies because they benefit from fabulous salaries. And these are also mostly people who work at the national level. When you go down to the local level, what individuals in these communities receive are a pittance. For example, they constantly talk about job creation. Here in the instance of Sammy Darby, for example, the overwhelming majority of the 3,700 people that are working for the company are classified as general workers. These people earn $5 a day. They work morning till evening. Sometimes they work for no more than 22, 23 days in which you get a take-home pay of around $130, $125. And you get given a bag of rice that gets deducted from your salary. So when you receive, say, for example, a gross of $120 and $44 is deducted for a bag of rice that you are given by the company, you are left with a little under $80, against which you then pay income tax. And so by the end of the day, your take-home pay is around $60-some-more. In some instances, we've seen pay slaves that register less than $50 per month.
Okay, you state in your report, and I quote, "To avoid future conflicts, the government needs to critically examine its policy on land allocation, with a view to reforming the current process for allocating land to investors, especially in the agricultural sector." Now, what's your recommendation for the new policy that the government should adopt?
Well, the starting point should be a recognition that those who live on the land, those who use the land, those who occupy the land, those who have got private properties in those areas, should be the first line of contact for anybody who would like to use any of that land for any kind of commercial activity. And the second line would be that the rights and interests of those people should be guaranteed in whatever agreements that are reached between the government and the company, and should actually be informed by the views of those people on the ground, should be informed by their own position. For example, we would like to see a situation, not only that we would like to see it, but it would make more sense if where the company would like to operate, communities in those areas would be first consulted and given the full breadth of information about what the implications, the impact of the development that's being proposed would be on their communities and on their livelihood. And based on that, a very mutually respectful discussion is allowed to take place in which those communities are allowed to say, yes, we accept, we acknowledge that there will be negative consequences, but we would like to go along with this project, or basically being allowed to say, sorry, we do appreciate your explanations about how well this is going to benefit us, but we believe that it will have much more negative impact on our livelihoods than the potential benefits that it will deliver. And based on that, if they decide to allow these companies to operate, there should be very fair and equitable agreements that are reached between the landowners, whether customary or people who hold land under a statutory regime, be allowed to negotiate what would be the acceptable terms for them to operate. And all of this has to happen in the context of free, prior, informed consent and negotiations that are taking place in a non-threatening environment, in an environment in which the communities are supported by the state to negotiate a fair deal.
Are you saying that you're not opposed to the establishment of large-scale industrial agriculture? I mean, we know that this kind of agriculture has deleterious effects on the environment and is a major contributor to climate change. Are you saying that you're still not opposed to this large-scale industrial agriculture being introduced?
I will have to clarify my position on that. And on the one hand, I, as a Liberian, and someone who's a bit informed about the potential negative environmental impact of these large-scale plantations, I have got my own views on that question. At the same time, I do respect that Liberia is a country that has emerged from a very brutal civil war. Poverty is extremely high, as you mentioned in the opening. Unemployment is extremely high. People's livelihoods, opportunities are very limited. And people are struggling to make a living. So I have to take those two perspectives into consideration in responding to that question. I believe, first and foremost, Liberia should focus on agriculture that delivers food security for the majority of the population. That is where we should be investing in agriculture, and not oil palm or rubber cultivation. That is my starting point. Liberia needs food. We've got fertile land. There is absolutely no reason why more than 80 to 90% of the rice that's eating in the country is imported from Asia. We've got absolutely no reason to rely on Asian rice imports. Having said that, if in a situation where communities are presented with a proposal for oil palm cultivation on their land, and they are provided the information that they need to make an informed decision, if they choose to go along that path, then our demand will be that they be supported to negotiate a fair deal that not only protects their rights and livelihood interests, but also their environmental well-being. It is very, very challenging in my situation, and I suppose a lot of people like myself who work in countries like Liberia, to stand up and say absolutely no plantation, because we are fully aware of the environmental consequences, because on the other hand, we are constantly challenged by the livelihood or poverty situation of communities in these areas. But I should quickly point out that in no instance have these large-scale monoculture plantations delivered for communities. They haven't delivered in the past. I don't believe they will deliver in the future. However, it is a bit of ethical dilemma for people like myself to stand up on behalf of communities and say, you say no because it will have environmental consequences. That's the dilemma that we face at the moment.
But it's certainly not bringing jobs to the communities. In fact, it's making a lot of people more unemployed, isn't it not?
It is bringing more poverty to people. It is creating more challenges for people because it is taking away livelihood options. For example, in Gaula, when we look at the situation where women used to be involved in small-scale businesses dealing with food production, for example, cassava, cultivating cassava, manufacturing that into different types of cassava products for food and marketing that to support their own families, they no longer have access to those opportunities. So effectively, you put all the women out of job in this instance. Where individual small cottages were coming up producing different types of arts and crafts at the local level that were then marketed. Again, those forest areas are being destroyed. So people are losing those opportunities to generate income from forest products that before were used to bring in income to support their families. So in a way, yes, it is putting a lot of people out of jobs. It is depriving people of livelihood opportunities. It is not creating the type of job that would lift people out of poverty. Certainly, $40 per month jobs can in no way lift anybody out of poverty, not if you got a family of five or six to feed. That is not enough to take you through the month, let alone taking you to another level of status within your society.
In recent years, there's been a lot of interest amongst multinational corporations in investing in palm oil. Why this interest in palm oil? What is palm oil used for?
a lot of them would use palm oil in different edible food materials, basically different types of products that are consumed mostly in the West. And in other instances, people are increasingly looking to products from these plantations for biodiesel. And I think it is a bit of an irony that people's effort in the West to cast their lifestyle as being green is actually contributing to the type of environmental degradation that we are seeing in the South, especially in Africa, and the type of poverty it is bringing to people in the South, the human rights abuses that are associated with it. So while people in Europe may want to cast themselves as making the transition from fossil fuel or maybe diversifying their energy basis from fossil fuel dependency towards other renewable, in inverted commas, I should add, forms of energy, they are directly contributing to environmental degradation in Africa. They are contributing to human rights abuses. They are contributing to increasing poverty situation in the rural community. So this is by no means the type of sustainability that we think the world need to move towards, but rather move towards less consumption of natural resources in order for us to balance growing population, growing demand for food on our planet with our needs to be able to improve our own living conditions in places like Africa and other parts of the South.
I understand that you're a contributor to a forthcoming report entitled Keep the Oil in the Soil. Would you also argue that you should keep palm oil in the plant?
I think to put that into perspective, to put my position on the keep the oil in the soil into perspective, our point is that we have looked at many different countries in Africa where oil is being produced. We've compared the situation in those countries with the situation in Liberia. And the similarities that we have seen, for example, really, really, really poor governance in places like Equatorial Guinea, in Liberia, in Sudan, very, very high level of corruption. Again, common thread across all of those countries, human rights abuses, and very low performance on the Human Development Index. And I take all of that and say, if this is the context within which we are exploring for more oil in Africa, or we are aiming in Liberia to produce oil, then I think we are going to add more to the problem that we have in Liberia already than helping to solve that. So that's the context within which we talk about keeping oil in the soil in the case of Liberia. In terms of palm oil, I should point out that Liberia is a country rich in indigenous species of very local variety of palm that people harvest from the wild. And palm oil is a big part of Liberian diet. Unfortunately, the palm that's being introduced by these Malaysian companies, you don't eat the oil. We would not be able to eat the oil until it has gone through a whole range of processing chain, mostly, I can say, at this point in Malaysia, and maybe before some of that oil will find its way back to Liberia. Whereas the traditional form of palm oil that people are used to, which is a big part of Liberian diet, is being cleared, is being destroyed, and being replaced with this palm that we don't eat in the country at the moment. I think that's a big problem, and therefore they should keep these imported palm species in the countries where they come from and let them produce the palm oil in Malaysia and Indonesia. And I think people in Liberia who would want the imported oil would be very happy to import it from Malaysia, and we can continue to have our native palm oil, which is a big, big part of Liberian diet and a big opportunity for small businesses, big income generator for a lot of rural families. That's how we would like to keep it.
Thank you, Silas Siakor. We look forward to perhaps speaking to you again when the report on Keep the Oil in the Soil comes out. Thank you for joining us on this program, and best of luck in your struggles to get justice for farmers who've been dislodged by these multinational corporations. Thanks for being on our show.
Thanks a lot.
That was Silas Siakor, campaigner for Community Rights Programme of the Sustainable Development Institute in Liberia. Mago, number one. Scatter, scatter, number one.
Confession, number one, a confession, number one.